highlighting the topics that affect agriculture nationwide. It's the AgNet Weekly with Sabrina Halverson, brought to you by AgNet Media. And now, here's this week's featured conversation.
This week, we're getting an update from Washington, D.C. with Congressman Austin Scott of Georgia, and we'll talk about several issues important to agriculture. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and this is the AgNet Weekly. Well, Representative Scott, thank you for joining us this morning. Let's start out with introducing yourself and tell us a little bit about your district.
So I'm Austin Scott. I represent the 8th District in Georgia. And so that is a district that runs from the Florida-Georgia line straight up I-75 to just north of Macon. And I represent right at 30 counties, and the majority of my county's agriculture is the economy.
All right. Being from Georgia, you know quite a bit about agriculture and a lot about diversity, with Georgia having so many crops. What is a little bit that's going on right now? I know we're still talking about the Farm Bill. We haven't had anything passed yet. Are you seeing some movement in that direction?
Yeah, we hope to have language over the next couple of weeks that we'll be able to release. The big issue is the CBO scoring and whether or not we're able to increase reference prices to reflect the increased cost of fuel and fertilizer and labor and the other increases that we've seen that our farmers are paying. And so we don't want an extension. We want to have a five-year farm bill, but that five-year farm bill has got to take into account the increased cost of operations for the American farmer. So it's been a difficult time with the Congressional Budget Office. Right now, we're putting, according to their scores, less than 10% of what we call the farm bill into production, agriculture, and risk mitigation for our producers. And that's simply not enough for them to be able to, you know, have the stop losses that they need to keep their operations going forward in case of bad commodity collapses.
And we've talked about the Farm Bill before, but when it comes to the actual farm part of the Farm Bill versus the nutrition part of the Farm Bill, do you think that it is wise to keep those together still?
I think it's time to separate them. I've advocated for separating them for the last several years. I do think that, the partnership has worked over the course of the last several decades. In today's day and time, it doesn't seem to be working for the producer. It's not an equitable split when you have gone down to less than 10% going to production agriculture. If we're, just honest about things, ARC and PLC, or temporary law, and SNAP and many of the other aspects of the provision are permanent law. And so what the American farmer needs, what the producer needs, is temporary law that without a reauthorization would cease to exist, where most of the other things would continue even if the Farm Bill didn't pass. And so that has put those of us who represent rural America at a disadvantage in the negotiations. That's one of the challenges. The other challenge is that the population growth in the country has been in the metropolitan areas. And so there are fewer and fewer of us that actually represent a farm country. And there are fewer and fewer Democrats that represent farm country. And so I'm fortunate to be from a state where I have Sanford Bishop and David Scott, both good pro-ag Democrats. I have other pro-ag Democrats in Georgia too. I mentioned them because they're on the committee. But a lot of states don't have pro-ag Democrats. I mean, people from the metropolitan area don't understand what it takes, to operate the farm. And so I shouldn't point that finger at Democrats when there are a lot of metro area Republicans that won't support the Farm Bill either.
I mean, it's an interesting concept thinking about the metro areas versus the rural areas. And it's something that we have faced for generations, really. But which direction is understanding going? Do you think that divide is getting bigger as we do get more metropolitan growth? Or what can we do to combat that?
Well, politics as a whole has gotten more divisive. And, the lack of journalism in the country has given way to a lot of that. What I refer to as the political industrial complex, the fundraising that comes from, Facebook posts and other things that at a minimum misrepresent the truth on a lot of issues. And where I come from, if it's a half truth, that makes it a whole lie. And so I think part of it is today's, dynamics in politics has simply made it more difficult to get things done. The other aspect of that is we have fewer and fewer farmers out there. And, we want these beginning young and small farmers to come into business and be able to grow their practices and become large farmers. But increasingly, as I talk to the farmers that I know back home, they're encouraging their kids to look elsewhere for their livelihood. And so both sides of my family at the grandparent level farmed, and now in my generation, nobody farms. And so we still own some land. That land is leased to people who actually farm it, put the seed in the ground, take the risk, you know, and buying the fertilizer and the diesel and hiring the people to grow the crops. And so I think having fewer farmers, having fewer of us who actually represent farm country and come from the farm in Congress has made it much more difficult to get things passed that actually work for production agriculture. And let me tell you something, whether you farm or not, you need the American farmer to make a profit. Because if they're not making a profit, they're not staying in business. And don't mistake how much you're paying at the grocery store for what the American farmer is being paid. Because as a percentage of what you're spending at the grocery store, the American farmer has historically gotten, you know, or in today's day and time, is getting less than 10% of that.
Right. And there's another issue that I personally feel is misunderstood, or when I talk to people out in the public is misunderstood, and that is the adverse effect wage rate. And I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about that with you, especially with you being from Georgia. As I mentioned earlier, you've got diversity in your crops there, a lot of those being specialty crops, which are a little bit more, a lot more really labor heavy. Sure. And sure. Our farmers are paying so much for this labor. That's one thing that's misunderstood. Often we hear, oh, farmers aren't paying their labor or anything. I know that there has been some talk about work on the adverse effect wage rate. Are we seeing any help there?
It's going to be difficult to get anything passed. We do have a pretty broad agreement, even with Democrat support, that the last couple of rate increases were too high. And so in my state, we saw, I think, 20% one year and 15% the next. Don't hold me to those exact numbers. But it's not just the amount of cash that people are paid for the work that they do. Remember, they've got housing on top of it. There's food on top of it. When you start talking about, and I don't have the wage rate in front of me, but if it was $20 an hour, you've got housing and food and other things that are paid in addition to that the farmer's paying. So the wage rates, again, as you continue to push the cost of operations up, it makes it much more difficult for the smaller farmers to compete with the larger farmers. In my area, most of the people use consultants and H2A to harvest their crops. And it is a difficult process for our producers to go through. And it's expensive and time consuming process for our producers to go through. And many times the labor doesn't make it to the country when they need to be here for them to actually harvest the crop. So we need to do a better job with making it easier to get people into the United States to harvest the crops. We need to be fair with them and their wages and how they're treated when they're here in our country. And, you know, and then they need to go home after the harvest season. And we have a system that with some changes could actually, you know, probably work, minor changes.
Right. It wouldn't take a complete overhaul to make this work, right?
Sure. You've got a framework. I mean, we are having to hire consultants. And the thing that I hear from my people is when you set a system that says, well, if the person ever drives a truck, then the person has to be paid as a truck driver the whole time they're here. Well, that's not the reality of the way things work on the farm. I mean, if a truck needs to be moved, someone goes and moves the truck. I mean, that's just all there is to it. And that doesn't mean that you're a truck driver or should be paid as a truck driver, you know, the rest of your time in the country.
Right.
It's simply common sense and being reasonable and, you know, unfortunately, you just don't see that out of federal agencies these days.
Yes, I wasn't sure I was going to say that, but right. Are we seeing a lot of common sense and being reasonable? Those were actually the two main topics that I wanted to talk about, but I was wondering if we could hit on trade a little bit.
Sure.
From my perspective, from what I have seen in the last several years, this administration has not been big on trade, especially when it is for agriculture. There have been some trade missions this year that were getting a little bit more interest in agricultural aspects and trades. But do you see any progress, anything happening along the trade fronts for creating new trade for ag?
I don't see this administration doing things that are favorable to the agriculture markets. I just don't, I'm not going to say anything else with regard to them than that. I don't see them taking an active role in the creation of additional markets for our ag products. The only thing that we have seen that was helpful is having the tariffs taken off pecans, or a significant portion of the tariffs taken off pecans going into India. That was helpful to a lot of the producers in my area. But that was a multi-year, multi-person process. Sanford Bishop, David Scott, and I all worked very hard on it. Our senators helped us with it as well. That's one of the things that I have seen that's been done that did help us. But, you know, again, that took way, way too long. I mean, our farmers need new markets open now. And the other aspect of trade is we've allowed too much of our inputs to become controlled by China. And so if you go back about a decade, about 80%, I think, of the seed supply actually came from U.S.-based companies 10 to 15 years ago. And today, a very small percentage of the global seed supply comes from U.S.-based companies. So when you talk about whether it's seed or chemicals or fertilizer, we have not done a good job as a country of making sure that we protect the inputs of our food supply. And we talk a lot about China. I don't blame China for being smart. I mean, they've been smart with what they've done with Syngenta and other things. I blame us for not recognizing the threat of letting the inputs of our food supply get offshored. And then we're doing a lot of things in the courts that are not helpful with taking chemicals off the markets that our farmers need to have the yields that we enjoy inside the United States. And so we have the ability to be the world leader in food supply. We certainly have the ability to feed ourselves as a country. But if you allow someone else to control your inputs, especially if that person is your adversary, then you simply can't grow the crops. And so we have to have the seed, we have to have the chemicals, and we have made a mistake by allowing China to control as much of that as they do.
Well, Representative Scott, I want to thank you so much for taking some time with me today. I know that you are just about out of time, but I do want to give you the opportunity to have the last word. So is there anything else that you would like for our listeners and viewers to hear about or to know?
Yeah, I want you to know this. There are 435 members of the House of Representatives, and it's about 50-50 Democrats and Republicans right now. Most of the people up here are good people that have differences of opinion on how to do the right thing. I'm not going to tell you that everybody up here is. We have, you know, 5% of the 435 that most of us feel like we'd be better off if somebody else was sent here. But, you know, just keep in mind, the country's been through tough times before. I believe in prayer. So keep us in your prayers and pray that those of us who are trying to move the country and the world in a direction that would be pleasing to God would be successful. And that those who are working against that would, you know, have a more difficult time. But I appreciate you, and let's be thankful for the things we have.
Thank you once again to Representative Austin Scott of Georgia. Well, if you want to hear more conversations like that, make sure you hit that subscribe button, and you can get our AgNet Weekly every Saturday morning. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and this has been the AgNet Weekly.
Continue the conversation online by following Sabrina Halverson on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn. And get more agricultural news at southeastagnet.com and agnetwest.com. This has been the AgNet Weekly from AgNet Media. Thank you for tuning in.